And welcome back, everybody. We're talking with Jay Widener about the insanity of our times, the insane left, the kooky neocons and Trotskyites, gun control, the war really on a demographic level and everything else. And we kind of ended talking a little bit about Hollywood. I want to ask you some more about this because I've been amazed that we have at this stage yet not seen a viable option to this control propaganda machine blooming up on the horizon. I mean, let's face it, there's actually a lot of people out there with a lot of money that I believe still actually have a, they do have a good heart. They see some of the stuff that's going on. And the way that media and entertainment specifically have been controlling people's minds of ruling the culture, really, Jay, that has been so tremendously, I mean, that strategy move has been just tremendously beneficial to their agenda. What do you think could cause some kind of viable option against this? I think we're seeing it a little bit now, but it's still kind of, you know, YouTube-based. It's still kind of more on the low-key end of things. But what we need is like funding, obviously, as usual, but more money being poured into this to be able to tackle some of the insanity when it comes to the entertainment media out of Hollywood. What do you think about that, Jay?
Oh, I agree. It's one of the reasons that I used my own money to make a feature film. Because I, you know, for one thing, I knew that no one would ever fund my movies, and I know I'll never win any awards in film festivals or anything because of the nature of the politics of these things. But yeah, the you know, here we have Harvey Weinstein, one of the biggest scumbags that's ever lived. Okay,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Harvey has made his millions making extremely violent movies. Usually anti-Christian, anti-American undertones to them, but we won't get into that. What we will get into is that they're extremely violent, all right?
Yeah.
So then Sandy Hook comes out. I think it was Sandy Hook, or maybe it was Santa Barbara, or one of those shootings. And he comes out and he says, oh, Weinstein Films is not going to make any more films with guns in them. And I'm like, oh, well, that's really great, Harvey. Now that you've made all your millions making all these extremely violent movies with guns, now you're going to stop making movies with guns. Well, he, not only is he probably going to go bankrupt because his movies are going to be so bloody boring, but he's just a hypocrite. He's a complete and total hypocrite.
Yeah.
And he funds violent movies, makes millions off of it, maybe even causes some of these killers to think about doing violent acts because they saw his movies, and then he acts like he's not responsible for it.
Yeah.
Typical liberal hypocrisy.
Yeah.
And this is what they always do, you know. And so yeah, I think, you know, I think several independent filmmakers have tried to, you know, create kind of an opposition to Hollywood, but the problem is that you can't get past their distribution networks. So, like, the people that are distributing my film are from Europe. So they're based in Hollywood, but they're Europeans. So they don't feel, when they see my film, they don't see the underlying message of my movie as being particularly threatening to them, because they're not Americans. But I think the powers that be in America would see the message in my movie Last Avatar and find it extremely threatening. When I lived in Hollywood and worked in Hollywood, there were people that were called consulting producers.
Mm-hmm.
And what consulting producers did was basically approve your script and what you were doing. Approve it for what, though? We never did ever find out. There was some process that you have to follow to get your projects approved. And these consulting producers weren't just in the script stage. They would come and watch the dailies, which are the, you know, what you filmed yesterday. And they never really said anything to anybody, and nobody really knew who they were, but everyone was really afraid of them. And what I think they were now in retrospect, 25 years later, is they were the politically correct police for the studios.
Yeah.
Making sure that you were staying in line politically. And that's why films never go out of line. You know, unless you have someone like maybe Clint Eastwood who has enough power to make something that goes a little bit politically incorrect. But they're few and far
between. That's
rare.
Yeah, very rare. Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, very rare.
I think it's too many people are crawling to Hollywood as well to make it. A lot of talented people, of course, they know that that's where it's at. at this moment. But I mean, it's more than that, you know, pretty young, naive girls and guys for that matter too, who get used in all kinds of ways and exploited and everything else. And, you know, as you said, some of these producers like Eli Roth, you know, with violence and sex and perversion and gross out comedies with, like, you know, Seth Rogen and Judd Apatow's movies, Will Ferrell even. We actually have a review of Anchorman 2 coming out here now, just in a day or so, that actually deconstructs some of the garbage that comes through some of these movies. So I recommend you guys listening to check that out if you haven't seen it yet. It's going to be up on the website here very, very shortly. But that's the nature of what we're faced with here. And it's kind of it's a really insidious, like, political message weaved into sappiness and boring nonsense, frankly. But what's most important, what I've witnessed as well, is just what you said before, the way that they're overdoing these characters that are everything but politically correct in order to actually shape people according to political correctness. These characters in these movies now, they're done in such a way so that people, you know, are laughing at the idiot and identifying on the level of saying, oh my God, I can, you know, you can never say anything that he says because he's the Homer Simpson or the Al Bundy or the Ron Burgundy, you know, that kind of style. So right. A lot of that is coming through Hollywood. So how do we, there's got to be another way here. There's got to be another way people can find a new way of producing some of this stuff and doing that outside of the realm of Hollywood and not go crawling to them to make, you know, all of this stuff happen. Do you see what I'm saying?
I do. In fact, I'm actually working for a company that's trying to do that. GaiaMTV.com is run by a friend, a former guy I've known for years, and he's very wealthy and very aware of what we're talking about. And, you know, and he basically came to me a few years ago and said, I would like, you know, to make the anti-Hollywood network, and I would like to fund it. And I don't want any violence on it. I don't want any sexual perversions. I don't want, you know, I don't even want any cuss words even to be used on this thing. I want it to be a consciousness raising programming that makes people aware. And so I took the job, didn't really need the job, but I took it because I figured there was probably not that many people qualified to even take the job that needed no production, but also had to be somewhat awake. And he's kept his word. He's stuck with it now. It's been over 2 years, and he's still massively funding the enterprise. And I hear rumors that there's other wealthy individuals who have now decided to do similar things. And so I think there's a rebellion going on.
Yeah.
Among certain people that are probably, you know, they're wealthy but not in the elites. They've made their money, you know, their own way, and they've never really been accepted into the old boys club. Because remember, the old boys club is you know, East Coast, European based, and so newcomers don't get to get into the old boys network. And because of the high technology revolution, there are a lot of these guys that have made a lot of money. And frankly, I think the powers be are a little bit worried about all these guys right now.
Right. Yeah.
Because they can actually fund these things. And everybody's waking up. So another thing that's going on is it's starting to become hip to know about all these things, which is another thing that the powers that be don't want to have happen, is to have it actually become hip to know that they're a bunch of evil scumbags. But that is actually beginning to happen too. And, you know, people like David Icke are being proven that the things that they have been saying for 20 years, like the pedophile scandal in England, he was right. Let's face it. David Icke was right. He was 100% right. And he was right about that when everyone was calling him a crazy man. Then what else has David Icke been right about over all these years? And I think you will find that David Icke is just going to get righter and righter. And I think you are too. People listening to this show, your credibility itself is out the top and over the roof. And I think that that's what we're going to need to stop them. It's kind of a humble credibility and a courage that to say things that, you know, no one else will say. And I think when you do that, then other people get the courage to say it too, And you've been around long enough, you know that people are waking up. I know
yeah.
you think it's not fast enough,
yeah.
and I agree with you, but they are waking up. I see it.
Yeah.
I see it every day. I see people that 5 years ago thought I was a complete crazy person now trying to have conversations with me. So,
yeah. Yeah.
you know, it is happening.
Well, you're right.
But Hollywood has to be taken down. That's one thing that has to happen.
Exactly. Definitely. I mean, we need bring people to the truth. That's what this is about, wherever it may lead. And we have to be bold. We have to be brave to speak about these things. We cannot be fear to be put down by stupid things such as political correctness and everything else. I mean, these are just, frankly, petty attempts to try to keep people away from it. And maybe it worked for a little bit for some people. But I mean, at the end of the day, when things are, you know, getting to the extent that they are so much, you know, worse, it's getting worse and worse by the day. More and more people are realizing what's going on. They're seeing through the hypocrisy. And frankly, they're getting fucking angry about it too. You know, this is like, this is it. You know, I've had it. We have to speak up about this, because otherwise we'll be dragged into this black hole of nothingness, and that will be it. And there's no, you know, there's no way back from that. So we have to speak up no matter where the truth leads. That's my philosophy anyway.
I agree. You know, I'm writing an essay right now on the album The Future by Leonard Cohen. It came out in 1992, and I hadn't heard the album in years, and I was on a long drive, and my wife found my iPod and clipped it on, and I hadn't heard it in like 8 or 9 years, and I realized that the entire album was a description of now. It came out in 1992, and the very first song on the album is The Future, and the point of view of the person singing the song is the devil himself. And he's telling you, the listener, his plans for the future. And he's telling you that he's going to destroy the Western world. He's going to destroy our sexual relations with each other. He's going to make a violent universe. And at the very end of the song, he says that he's going to create a giant worldwide race war in which everybody dies.
Wow.
And when I was listening to the song in my car, and I was just jaw-dropped, stunned by it. I'd never really heard the song like that before. I started listening to the rest of the album, and Leonard Cohen clearly is saying that he ran around with these people that are doing what they're doing to us right now. He calls them a lawless crowd. I can't run no more with that lawless crowd. What killers in high places who say their prayers out loud. And he's describing the elites and who they are, and he's saying that they're coming to kill us. And this is in 1992. This is going to be an extremely explosive essay, because I've since found out that Leonard Cohen was also involved in the MK Ultra experiments in Montreal in the late 50s and early 60s. And anyway, it's explosive.
Wow.
Because you know, he's saying that, and he's against it.
Right.
He's actually taking a very conservative position, and he's against it and realizes that it's going to be really quite terrible. And so, you know, I heard this album, you know, for the first time in like 10 years driving down, to some place like a week and a half ago. And you know, all the stuff is going on with ISIS and the border crossings. And I realized, oh my God, Leonard Cohen not only knew about all this, but he wrote an entire album to warn us about it. I'll send it to you when I get it.
I'd love to read it. Do you think that's kind of like a confession of an insider who used to be kind of part of that network and then decided to speak out against it or something? Yeah.
I do. I think there's no other interpretation. I think that each song that he writes in the album is a further confession to him actually partaking in some of these activities and regretting it.
Well, he should be commended for that if he's dedicated to exposing that, for sure, you know?
Yeah, and, you know, at the very end of his song, The Future, you know, making sure you understand it's the devil that's saying all these things, you know, he says, you know, one of the very last lines in the song is, you know, give me Christ or give me Hiroshima, you know, and all the hairs on my neck stood up, because I realized what he was saying is, you know, you either give up your Christianity or I'm going to nuke your ass. And, you know, and I'm not a Christian, and, but, you know, I have sympathy for my fellow Christians because of the assault that they're under.
Sure.
And,
yeah.
And I hear this and I see Leonard Cohen saying it and I realize that he has been told by the powers that be that they're going to destroy the entire West. And he wrote a song to warn us about it.
Huh. Interesting. Yeah. I definitely want to read more about that. So what do you make of the kind of the world we talked about here a little bit before of what they're trying to and seek to create? Because one of the other issues is, here, of course, is that even if people are armed, even if they're ready to a certain extent, and I don't mean to cause some kind of just pessimism for the sake of it here, but just, you know, for the fact of kind of laying all the things out on the table and speculate what we might be facing here, because we have they're working on extreme advanced weaponry. They are working on things like robotics and drones and everything else. And it's kind of, it's a really delicate time right now because things, I believe, yet are not that sophisticated. Sure, perhaps they have things, you know, tucked away in the laboratories, waiting on standby, all that stuff. I recognize that. But at the same time, as far as we've seen released yet, it's not that, you know, prominent and advanced. But if this continues for a few more years, we have nanotechnology, genetics, you know, all this kind of stuff that might come onto the scene, which could completely change the picture even more to their favor. Are we in a window of opportunity right here where we try to, something has to be done before they get too powerful and have too much technology at their disposal, do you think, Jay?
Yeah, let me explain it to you this way. What has happened is that some 20 years ago, the internet started. And let me tell it this way. So the way that we acquire information in our lives is at first when we're young, everything is just little bits of information, and our teachers and our parents and our pastors and everybody, they feed us tons of little pieces of information. And then when we hit, you know, say puberty, we began to coalesce these little tiny bits of information into little pods of knowledge. Like we learn to play the guitar, or we learn to, figure out how a telescope works, or physics, or chemistry, or any of the things that you learn. And then later in life, when you hit about 35, you hopefully, if you're still an inquiring mind, you have developed a series of pods of knowledge. You know how to play the piano. You know about physics. You know about politics. You know about art. You know all these things that you've wanted to learn. But what happens at 35 is the brain begins coalescing these pods of knowledge, and it turns into wisdom. Basically, it would not going to happen until you're about 35 or 40, and only if you cultivate it. Okay, so yeah. What's going on in the world is very similar. 20 years ago, the internet started, and we were bombarded with bits of information. We didn't know what was true, what wasn't true. We couldn't figure anything out. It was just tons of information. Well, about 10 years ago, right around 9/11, actually, is when this started, we began to mature via the internet, and we started creating little pods of knowledge. Like shows like yours came out, Rents.com, little things started appearing that were coalescing knowledge, coalescing information into knowledge. And so people, very intelligent people mostly, were gravitating towards these sites because they wanted to figure out what was going on. Well, now what we're at the beginning of is the wisdomification of the entire planet. And that what I mean by that is that people who are wise are beginning to make serious connections, like David Icke, make serious connections between different things. They're very wise people, and they're causing for the first time in the history of the human race, all at the same time, a group of people are going from infants to wise people.
Right.
This is what must be stopped. This is what has to be stopped for the powers to be to succeed. And they do not want this to happen because these people will rise up to the top and become voices, like David Icke, who will create opposition to what's going on. Now, if everything goes on like it's going on, then we're going to be fully awake by about 2025. maybe 2030 at the latest. So they are doing everything they can to stop it. That's what I believe GMOs are, chemtrails, pollution in the water, fluoride, the wars, the dumbing down. Everything is this attempt to stop this wisdomification of the planet via the internet. There's nothing spiritual here. We're not talking about anything spiritual. We're talking hard bolts and nuts reality here.
Yep, yep.
This is what's going to happen. We're figuring out what's going on. We 10 years ago, you couldn't convince, not 10 years ago, 15 years ago, you couldn't convince anyone that there was a secret, a group of elites ruling the world. Only a certain small group of people believed it. Nowadays, Drudge Report is reporting the Bilderberger meetings. Okay, that's huge, and that's what's going on. Is we're being ruled by elites. Oh no, we're not. No, we're not. Well, then maybe we are. Okay, well, we are being ruled by elites. Holy Christ, we're being ruled by elites, and they're trying to kill us. Oh my God, we're being ruled by elites. We're trying to kill us, and they're trying to kill us right now. That's how this kind of thing is going, and we're now heading to the point where the next step is, okay, what do wise people do with children who are busting up the neighborhood, right?
Right.
And that's what we have. We have children busting up the neighborhood, Netanyahu and the guy in the Ukraine, and all these people are busting up the place, and we as adult, wise adults have to go out there and take care of business. And that's what's going to happen. And it's not going to happen, maybe not now, but it's going to happen. It's going to happen. And they know it. They know it. We have Zbigniew Brzezinski a few years ago, you know, at some meeting, it's on YouTube, you know, screaming about, we have to hurry because they're waking up too fast.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I remember that too. I think it was Hillary Clinton as well, talking about how they're losing the information warfare, you know, tactics and everything else.
Yeah, and so Newsweek came out, what, about a month and a half ago, saying the conspiracy theorists, especially those talking about Sandy Hook, so I'm probably one of them, are a threat to freedom of speech. So our freedom of speech and our using our freedom of speech is a threat to freedom of speech. And why is it a threat? Because we're questioning the official story. We're not saying that we know what happened. We're saying we don't know what happened. We just want to know. That is considered criminal behavior by the powers that be. So now the conspiracy theorists are going to start becoming the bad guys. Fortunately, there's people like me who are making our own form of propaganda in which the conspiracy theorists are actually going to be the good guys in our movies. And so they know this, too. They know that technology is falling away from them. They know that people aren't watching their TV shows and their movies anymore, and that, you know, a YouTube on Sandy Hook will get 4 million views while they'll release a movie that doesn't even get 100,000 people to go see it. CNN is lucky to have 75,000 people watching it at any one time. But, you know, a talk radio show like The Savage Nation, it gets 15 million people to listen to it.
Mm-hmm.
So they're losing their grip on almost everything all at the same time. And then there's, you know, the other problem, which is, you know, people like you and I, Henrik, who are going for broke with this thing and spreading it as fast as we can. And it's almost like a contagion. Somebody hears red ice and then they start wanting to do the same thing. And
yep,
they start spreading the word. And then pretty soon it's just like overwhelming the side. And that's what we have to do. We have to flood the zone. We got to overwhelm them with sheer intellectual ability. They did an independent scientific group did a survey of comments on websites. And what they did was they marked the comment pro-conspiracy or anti-conspiracy. And then they put all the pro-conspiracy comments on one side and all the anti-conspiracy comments on the other side, and they did a content analysis of both. And what they discovered was that the pro-conspiracy people actually did not ever claim to know what was going on. They only merely claimed to be questioning what was going on. They were also more polite, more willing to engage, and were intellectually more honest. The anti-conspiracy people were quick to insult, did not have their positions clearly defined, and finally frequently had to resort to their own conspiracy theories to explain events. And I get a lot out of that kind of survey. What it means is that, you know, we're not conspiracy theorists, we're reality wanters. And besides, if you read, say, Shakespeare, the best plays of Shakespeare are all conspiracies. And so people want conspiracies. They know that they're real. And so this idea that, there aren't conspiracies and the conspiracy theorists are somehow whack jobs, it's just not going to make it anymore.
Yeah. I mean, I'm hopeful as well that people will follow through to the full extent of seeing how the agenda is being played. I think, people like David Icke, as you mentioned, and of course yourself as well, create enough chaos initially in people's minds, when you were talking 10, 15 years ago, to have people broken out of their trance, and then hopefully at that point go on to the path and start seeking the truth and reality. And it's a crystallization process in that. I mean, I think that now many need to take the next step in the process and realize that there are a lot of, traps out there in history, and realize to a certain extent how it can also be used against us. I mean, to realize that there are tons of nuances in the story of reality and these various trapdoors along the way, but continue to seek. That's my point, because I can see myself in a way how certain things you do encounter along the way in your truth-seeking process do kind of play into the agenda. And then my question was always, okay, how much of this is a response from the elites themselves to try to seek, legitimacy for their reformation of society, how they want to see it? So it's very important. My point here is to follow through and continue to search, continue to look, and really realize that there are a lot of things along the way. But if we keep pushing through, keep pushing and questioning, I think we'll get there,
I do too, and I think you're absolutely right. I think the elites use a lot of this stuff to get their own agendas passed, and we may be unwitting fools for that. And we have to understand that. Again, it's wisdom. We're growing as a group, and we know we're right. That's the thing, is we know we're right. Every day we know we're right. We know we're righter than we were the day before. And people that we're talking to, they're comparing notes. They're like, I remember when you said that a year ago, and it really came to be true. And so we're gaining this kind of credibility through that. And, like I say, the pedophile scandal in England has just given David Icke so much credibility that anybody tries to criticize him now, I don't know how they even can. And, it makes you wonder if there aren't reptiles in power. That's something I've always had a kind of a disagreement with David about.
Sure,
but
yeah.
I'm starting to wonder now, maybe they really are. That's what we have to do. And, David's a great example of it. And in fact, my movie, The Last Avatar, is about the return of Kalki Avatar. And Kalki Avatar is the last avatar who comes to save humanity from the evil liars. And it's a real prediction from India that a Caucasian would come forward at the end of time and expose the liars. And a lot of people think David Icke is actually Kalki, a reincarnation or something of Kalki. I don't know what he thinks. I haven't asked him. But a lot of people think that. I was really surprised when I got on the web and found that out.
I can ask him next week. I'm talking with him. We'll see.
We'll say hi to him for me.
Yeah, I will, David. Do. No, David is great. I mean, he's certainly one of these gentlemen who's walked his own path. And again, we don't have to agree with him all the way. That's not the point. I mean, we can appreciate his dedication and his perspective. And also, again, to what I mentioned before, of I believe how many people have been kind of unlocked because of some of the, completely outrageous things that David Icke has been talking about. But this has sparked enough interest in a lot of people to a certain extent, myself included, to just go on that path and just continue to search and question reality and see what it is. And I think ultimately that, again, if we are given time, if we're dedicated to the task, we will end up in the right place. That's my hope, and that's my.
I agree. Back in 1999 You know, I was listening to David talking about all the pedophile stuff and not believing a word he said. And then I got involved in my own investigation of the JonBenet Ramsey murder mm-hmm. in Colorado, and really got into investigating it thoroughly. And I think I wrote an article that cracked the whole case. In fact, one of the leading investigative police officers said I did crack the case. And my only conclusion after a four-month investigation was that there was a gigantic pedophile ring in Boulder, and they were covering up for all of this. And then, you know, to myself, I'm going, no, this can't be. I mean, come on. You know, David, I can't be right, you know. But then I started thinking, well, maybe he is right, because I found it here in this case. And that's actually how I got started in all this. I realized that there was something more to all this than I believed, and I began going down that path of looking. And I kept finding it, and then I realized that it was true. There is a gang of criminals that are pedophiles that are running most of the major cities in the United States, and maybe Europe too. I don't know.
Do you think that network is connected to the Hollywood, you know, producing folks as well? I mean, I remember Corey Feldman speaking out about this. We had, of course, Corey Haim, who killed himself. With even Macaulay Culkin, I think, was you know, sexually abused as a kid in the industry, and that's one of the reasons why it's had so many issues with drugs and everything. And there was a couple of photos released of him recently. He just like completely emaciated and all, you know, worn out basically. And I mean, Corey Feldman wrote that book. I forget what it's called now, but he basically is trying to detail and warn and say that there's a ruthless predatory faction within Hollywood who operates and owns Hollywood that are, you know, doing this to young child actors that have come in there, you know?
Well, you know, actually, I do believe that. And, I mean, I've even come to the conclusion that, how do I say this? The music scene of the 60s out of L.A. Is somewhat pedophile-oriented, too. Mm-hmm. A lot of the bands we thought were so great, well, you know, they weren't so great, you know. John Phillips of the Mamas and Papas, he, you know, it came out that his daughter, Mackenzie Phillips, wrote a book. John is now dead, but she wrote a book about how he had sexual relations with her since she was 2 years old. And so we know that John Phillips, the lead singer of the Mamas and Papas and lead songwriter, was a pedophile. But what most people don't know is that Mackenzie Phillips is actually named after John Phillips' best friend, Scott Mackenzie. Scott Mackenzie sang one of John Phillips' most famous songs called San Francisco, which seems like an innocent song until you realize A, that he's a pedophile, and B, you start listening to the song and realizing that the song is calling for all lost children to come to San Francisco where you'll meet some gentle people there.
Oh my. Nice.
And you just, you realize what was really going on there in all of its horrifying. And you realize that both the L.A. and the San Francisco scene in the 60s may not be what we think they were.
Yeah.
They may actually have been engineered by this group to get a lot of young, lost children moving into these cities. I know that sounds shocking.
Wow.
But,
yeah.
Hmm. Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's like, was it an Australian judge here recently just saying that, you know, incest is no longer a taboo? They're trying to move these parameters that we have innate in us. I mean, it's a war on human nature and all kinds of fundamental human decency that we all know and have in us, I think. Well, perhaps these people don't, and there could be a number of reasons for that. One is, of course, that they might themselves have been used and abused at some point, which is kind of why one of the reasons why all these barriers have been broken, and they're basically seeking to kind of continue the cycle of abuse and draw, consequently, more children into this, which is horrible, of course. But this very... I mean, I can't help to see how it ties into the cultural Marxist agenda of continuously push everything, you know, on sexualization of children at a very young age when they're not even thinking about this, promoting in that regard homosexuality to kids who are not even thinking about sex at all at that stage. You know, what is this about?
Yeah, it is kind of a curious thing, isn't it? Well, I'll tell you what I think is going on here. There's this great book, it's called Fire and Ice, and I'm not going to remember the writer right now, I can't remember his name. But anyway, came out about 25 years ago, and what it was the
Robert Frost, right?
No, not Robert Frost. It's a book about the Saturnian Society, the Brotherhood of Saturn.
All right, okay.
And in this book, what they did was they discovered accidentally a whole bunch of the Brotherhood of Saturn's of papers, essentially. And this writer had their papers, and he wrote a book about the Brotherhood of Saturn. The Brotherhood of Saturn is a German secret society. It's been around for a long time. And they openly worship Lucifer. And they want to bring down the West and via kind of a sexual politics. This is listed in their writings of their plans. And bring down the entire West that way and establish a rule of Lucifer. This is their goal. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm reading this stuff, and of course I'm realizing first off that the entire goal of the Brotherhood of Saturn, what they wish to attain, is exactly entailed in the film 2001: A Space Odyssey. They believe that we're rising up from apehood, and we're moving into some kind of superhuman godlike status, and it's going to happen via Saturn, which is why the astronaut went to Saturn. He didn't in the movie because they couldn't make the rings, but he did go to Saturn in the book by Arthur C. Clarke,
mm-hmm.
who was also a pedophile, by the way.
Right.
And then I'm reading this book again, and I read the rituals of the Brotherhood of Saturn. And the rituals are exactly entailed in the film Eyes Wide Shut, in the orgy scene. That is exactly the rituals of the Brotherhood of Saturn. And so we can see that there's this weird mix of politics, mysticism, and sexuality. And when you see what the cultural Marxists are doing, you see that they're playing out these three things. And it has something to do with transforming us into slaves for these people who think they're gods, essentially.
Right.
And they openly worship Lucifer, by the way, openly, and make no bones about it.
Mm. Yeah, it was Stephen Flowers, right, wasn't it?
Yeah, Stephen Flowers.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, he wrote about
great
the
book.
Fraternitas Saturni, right? It was Eugene
right.
Grotius, I think his name was. And yeah, exactly.
Yep.
He was arrested for a year by the Nazi government. I guess he was released after that, but he died in 1964. So have you heard anything about the continuation of this society, if he was the leader of it? And
well, I think it went public.
I think they
took it international. I think that's what the 60s about. I think that's what 2001 was all about. I think Kubrick was in this society. I think he saw it. I think he saw what they were doing. I think it scared the living hell out of him. He realized that they were pedophiles. He realized that they were completely insane sexually. And as soon as he did it, he built that big mansion in St. Albans outside of London with giant walls, and he wanted to make sure that nobody ever got into his place because it worried him so much.
Right. Yeah.
And I think it was actually the Brotherhood of Saturn that kind of scared him. And I've looked into this even further, and it looks like a lot of the NASA people were in the Brotherhood of Saturn, especially the early German scientists that were brought in. And it seems to be much more pervasive than I ever thought before. And I'm actually completely convinced that Hollywood is run by the Brotherhood of Saturn. And the Brotherhood of Saturn is many things. I mean, it's the Nazis, it's the Zionists, it's the cultural Marxists. They're all symptoms of this group. Skull and Bones, 3322 is their sacred number. That's the sacred number of the Brotherhood of Saturn. And I think the Bushes are in it, and the whole thing,
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, definitely. I definitely want to see the continue. When is the third installment of the Kubrick film coming out, do you think?
Well, I have to wait until the last Avatar comes out by contract before I can put out my next film. So
right.
I can't. So I'm waiting for this to come out. Hopefully it'll be out. Last Avatar will be out in a month or two, and then I can put out Kubrick's Odyssey by the end of the year. That's what I'm hoping, because it's really going to be explosive. And one of the main things that I'm going to show is I'm going to reveal in this movie why Hollywood hates Walt Disney, and it's going to be explosive. It's so blatant and so clear, and Kubrick knew it. And Kubrick once told an interviewer that the only person he admired in old Hollywood was Walt Disney. And I'm about to reveal why he said that. And quite explosive, actually. And I think Walt Disney was probably asked to be in the Brotherhood, and he turned it down.
Oh, really? Huh. Yeah, because, I mean, look at how they've completely changed Disney after, you know, the Zionists took over there with Eisner and everyone else, you know. God, I mean, yeah. What was the latest one, Frozen, they released or something like that? I mean, it's like,
Oh, my God.
I mean, talk about cultural Marxism.
Well, they can't
Marxism,
make a good
you know?
Movie. Just, no. It's impossible for Hollywood to make a good movie. And then when somebody actually knows how to make a good movie, like James Cameron, they kick him out and they call him names.
Yeah.
He's living in New Zealand now. He doesn't want to deal with these guys anymore because, you know, they don't know how to tell stories. They don't have original ideas anymore. All they can do is make sequels. It makes me puke, actually.
Yeah, well, this is what's really good, I think, because, I mean, not only are they morally bankrupt, they're also creatively bankrupt. I mean, they have to, again, steal from everyone. I mean, how many times has that not happened in Hollywood?
Exactly.
You know, a good script comes along. I mean, even look at, I think it was Prometheus, was this new unknown. I watched the... what do you call it, a documentary or a making of or whatever, Ridley Scott's new film, that Prometheus, right. A while back, and was this new scriptwriter involved. He said, I'd never written anything before, and, you know, he met with the heads of the studio, and he was really, like, excited about all this, and I believe that it was a very much different script before they assigned one of their own on it. I think it was actually, I can't remember if it was not J.J. Abrams, this other guy, what's his name, Damon Lindelof, that's right, he came along and just completely changed the whole thing, and I think he ruined a really good story right there, actually. But this is how they do it, right? No. They put their own stamp on it, they put their own man into the script-making process, just as you mentioned before, and actually managed to derail a pretty good train that was heading in a good direction, I think, you know?
Well, I agree, you know, and what happened was that Oliver Stone in 1990, he got JFK funded, and what he did was he got one script funded and then he shot another script, okay? And when they saw the movie, they were horrified because that was not the movie they financed. And so from then on, that was 1991, from then on, nobody's ever been able to pull an Oliver Stone since.
Right.
And
yep.
Kubrick tried to do it with Eyes Wide Shut. Okay, he had, I've read the original script, it's really kind of insipid almost, and, you know, he didn't live to see the release of the film, just saying, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was the last time that I've seen a movie that tried to slip one in and try to get by it. Since then, since 99, it's few and far between. I mean, just look at two Matrix films that followed the original one. What a bunch of crap those were. And propaganda for the powers that be, really.
Yeah, I know. This took in a different direction. That, but by the way, speaking of Eyes Wide Shut, did you ever read Arthur Schnitzler's Dream Story? Yeah, it was, because I was always wondered why he picked up. Did you think he used one of kind of frame the film in that context, but taking in a different direction in terms of the elite and all that stuff, right?
Yeah, he was really, that's what he liked to do. If you think about, like, Lolita, he buys the film Lolita, which is a silly film, a silly book about this guy who loves this young girl. And then Kubrick mysteriously slips in this pedophile ring, which Peter Fonda and his girlfriend, and completely changes the character of Quilty until he's like, he's not even the same guy, he's just a school teacher in the book, but in the movie, he's this insidious, obvious pedophile ringleader trying to get Lolita, and that was Kubrick. He added it in. He does that everywhere, you know, all through his movies. He has this kind of blasé sounding plot, and then, you know, he makes a movie that's, you know, electric. Even the book A Clockwork Orange is kind of bland, and then he turned it into an anti-mind control movie, where really it wasn't about that at all in the book. It was really more about morality. And, you know, he does that all the time, and people don't realize it. And they're almost like they don't really see what he's doing. You know, the hero of A Clockwork Orange is the minister in the jail. He's the only one that's actually speaking, you know, about that this is completely unjust. And he's supposed to be the buffoon. The hero in Full Metal Jacket is not any of the Marines. It's the 14-year-old Vietnamese girl who's a sniper, who is absolutely unafraid to die fighting for her people. And you know, so you watch these films, and it's just always very curious how he manages to slip in these kind of contradictory messages. And I don't think you're going to see that too often from now on. You know, my generation of filmmakers they just don't do those things.
Right. Yeah.
You know, Steven Spielberg would rather make a movie about little boys than he would about something serious.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. So, completely different, unrelated question for you here before we begin to wrap things up for this time, Jay. So who do you think the next Democratic president is going to become to seek the final Marxist destruction of America? Is Hillary Clinton going to get in there, do you think?
Well, I think she's got some serious health problems that they're hiding. I fear Elizabeth Warren from Massachusetts more than anybody else.
Yeah.
I think she's being set up. She's a complete Marxist. I don't want to use any more nasty words to describe her.
Did you hear her clip, the one that was on YouTube about how, you know, no one owned, if you owned your business and all that, you didn't build it. Yeah, exactly. We own the roads. We own everything.
Yeah. All paid for with taxes from businesses.
Yeah, exactly. You know, exactly.
She complained. As a small business person, I just want you to know that I found that really offensive.
Exactly. Oh, definitely. Yeah, but that's the attitude of them, though. I mean, so Obama said that, too. You know, it's your business. You didn't really build that. It's not really yours, you know. It's all collectivism, you know.
Yeah, and we're hearing it from two people who absolutely have built nothing in their entire lives.
Yeah. Yeah.
Neither Obama or Elizabeth Warren has ever done anything but be a politician.
And that's ultimately why they think that way too. They're very theoretical. They're studying at Harvard Law School, like, you know, Warren, for example. And it's like, it's all theoretical, you know, Frankfurt School inspired Marxism. And they have actually not gone out into the world and tried to do something or achieve something on that level, you know, of building, you know, your own business and whatnot, which is...
Oh, they hate God, it. They hate people that do that. It's even worse than not doing it. They despise people that do it. They absolutely despise them. And again, it's kind of an immature, selfish, psychopathic attitude.
They want people dependent on the system, I've come to realize. They don't care if they have to pay, you know, welfare to everybody. Just as long as you're sitting and receiving from the, you know, the teat from the government, they are happy because they ultimately control you, right?
That's right. It's all about control. They don't care whether you're happy or not. You won't be. Trust me, no matter what you think, it's not going to go down good. So any time that you have centralization of power, you have psychopaths increasing their power. And we need to decentralize everything. The healthcare system, the politics, everything needs to be decentralized, broken up, made into small little groups. We have the internet for the big things. We can use that. But I don't know. I don't see how it can go any other way, but towards this. I mean, even if we go to a brief collectivism in between, that will break up because we both know that it'll go bankrupt. So I'm sort of kind of positive in a weird way in the long run.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I am too. They've flown around some ideas here just briefly, some about like basic income and stuff like that. And I mean, it's like, I just cringe when I hear this stuff of like, can you imagine how human creativity would be shut down if they managed to bring in a kooky idea like this? And I've actually heard some of them justifying. I think it was a PBS piece on this as well. And the person who was promoting it actually mentioned, no, it's not true because people, if you look at people in prison, and he actually compared, you know, Earth to prison. He said people in prison, they actually prefer to actually do something with themselves and work and not sit around on their ass all day. It was like, well, that's prisoners. That's like a different scenario here, you know? Oh, my God, you know? So
that's very telling, actually.
It is very telling. It is very telling. Because, I mean, you know, the greatest of ingenuity is when we're challenged and faced with issues of problems and crisis and everything else. And I think that this is something that's vital to our continuation and our continued, you know, fulfillment of achieving things, going out into space even, or inventing things, or coming up with free energy technology, what have you, right? And this is the very engine that they're seeking to shut down with this kind of politics, that we're all equal. It doesn't matter how hard you work, you make the same as everyone else. Now there's a base income, you know, protection net in place. I think that more and more people is going to end up on their ass, and we're going to see the complete and utter destruction of the human race if they manage to push something like this through.
Oh, I think so. But, there is a rebellion. I'm sure you know about BRICS and them forming their own little bank. And they're sick and tired of being run by the American Federal Reserve. And so, it's not just resistance from within, but they're getting resistance from without. And people are sick and tired of the QE1, QE2. It really hurts third world countries when we print money. And they're getting really tired of it. And they're beginning to figure out. The banking system is one of the things that we figured out via the internet over the last 20 years. Now people understand the banking system fairly good, whereas they used to not. And it's and the same thing with like Sandy Hook and the false flags. We're figuring out how they're doing it. We're figuring out what their tricks are and comparing notes. And one by one, these facades are going to fall, and they know it. So they have to act now. That's why they're doing it now, because they realize that in a year, 2, 3 years, we're just going to be laughing at them, actually, and their lies. And when we don't believe them, then they will not have any power. And if we still have our guns, then they can't even do anything to us physically. So there is some rays of hope.
Yeah, I hope you're right, Jay. And I think all these countries as well, just a final note on this, that they should go their own way. And if none of these globalists and their interests would be involved in it, I think if they could be left to their own devices, they would excel to their own level in their own extent, and they would not seek to flood into the West and Europe and America and everything else. And I think it would be a better place because of it. So that's the way to go, I think. Self-determination and decentralization.
Yeah.
That's it, you know.
That's exactly right. It's what I believe in. I believe that's the future. Collectivism is one of the dumbest ideas ever invented by any human being. That's what I believe. I don't believe Marx was any kind of smart man. He was a horrible father and family member. He treated his family terrible. He was a nasty, nasty guy. And I don't think that he was even an intellectual giant. And I don't know why people think he was.
When he ripped off Engels probably quite a bit.
Well, he did. But even Engels isn't the greatest genius in the world. They don't. If you read Das Kapital, you realize that they don't understand human nature.
No,
that's problem
right.
with Marxism.
Yeah.
They don't understand why a man gets up in the morning and goes to work. And since they don't understand that, because none of them ever did go to work, by the way.
Yeah, that's right.
That they can't understand humans, so they just want to make a plan. The bankers like their plan, apparently, and the rest is going to be history unless we stop it.
That's right. That's why it's a war on human nature. They want to try to destroy those elements within us that are rebelling naturally and organically against these stupid ideas. But let's end on that note, Jay, then. And please give us the websites again if there's anything else you'd like to leave us with for this time.
Yeah, you can get all my free writings at Jay Widener, JAYWEIDNER.com. You can see my films and videos at sacredmysteries.com. And my new film, The Last Avatar, will be out very soon. And then the third part of my Kubrick's Odyssey series will also be out in a few months.
Excellent. We'll have all your links up on the website. Thanks, Jay. Good talking with you again. Great having you back.
Thanks, Henry. Okay, we'll talk.
All right, we have more programs coming up next week. There are several good shows in the pipeline, so stay tuned to the websites. We'll have our upcoming guests listed in our radio archive. I hope you have a good weekend, that you take the time to learn something new and do something productive and creative. Don't spend your money on booze and other trappings. Get focused, work out, improve yourself, become a better man and a woman. This is what we need at this time. People who can live and lead by example in a time of decadence, degenerate art, and anti-intellectualism. Why not make something beautiful for a change? All right, whatever you do, keep listening to Red Eyes Radio. Tell your friends about us. Share our programs with them. Help us out and give us a good review on Facebook if you can make the time as well. All right, take care, everybody. We'll speak to you in just a few days. Bye-bye.